Blog Talk Radio.
Since I've done Blog Talk, because I'm really doing Instagram. And you know what? I just love Blog Talk also. So I'm very happy to announce a very special guest that I've got today. And I'm bringing him special just for you. And you do know that this goes everywhere. So remember, you can listen to this on iHeartRadio. You can listen to it on Apple Music and Amazon Music and everywhere it goes all over the world and the universe, hopefully. So everyone, if you don't know who you're listening to, and I say this all the time, you're listening to Bonnie Albers on air, and I am the hostess with the mostest, Bonnie Albers. Today, we have such an interesting guest, but he's so interesting, I don't even know where to start with him. But I'm going to try really hard because I want to make sure that I give him his just ado. Today I've got Mark Ireland with me, and I'm going to douse him in a minute. The books that he's written so far that I have read are Soul Shift and his new one, The Persistence of the Soul. They're very interesting. I'm just really, when you get and tear it all apart, it's this last one is about Mark's life and things that have happened to him and relatives that he's had. You have good things in it that I just adore, which of course is about spirit. And then you have him challenging things as a counselor, a nurse, and as a spirit medium. It's really tough, I'm sure, for Mark to talk about. We're going to bring him in right now. So please help me welcome Mark Ireland to the house. Hi, Mark.
Hello. That was too much buildup for me, but thank you.
Oh, no, and I didn't tell them you're really handsome, too. So everyone, if you get the book, you might actually get to see Mark Ireland. He's a really nice man. I've talked to him on the phone before this interview, and he has just got so much to offer. You know, Mark, I'm going to start with a few things, and I'm hoping that if you feel that you want to start somewhere else, you let me know. But I'm looking, when I looked at your paper and I looked at the book, and thank you, by the way, for sending me the book. The timeline I'm going to start with is the first book, Soul Shift. So what made you write these books?
Well, the catalyst was actually the untimely, or at least to me, seemingly untimely passing of my youngest son. So while I grew up with a father who was a pretty prominent psychic and medium back in the 50s through the 80s, and I saw a lot of evidence, not only the psychic stuff, but the mediumship that where he would give messages that were highly specific to people he didn't know. It really showed me from a young age that life goes on after the end of our physical existence, and consciousness must be something more than just what the brain generates. And that always stuck with me. I didn't follow my father's footsteps. I took a more conventional path in life. I got a college degree and got into the business world, got married at a young age and had a couple of boys, and was just cruising along, kind of doing the conventional American life thing. And when my youngest son, Brandon, passed unexpectedly, it really shook me and my family, obviously. And it drew me back to my dad's work, what he had done, and the things I'd seen. So I really sought to re-engage.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want you to go too much further because I want people to listen. This is where I'm confused, and I guess I need a timeline. Was your son, and
okay.
I know it's really, you know, again, my heartfelt, you know, sympathies for you. It's never great to lose a child. I always feel that, you know, parents weren't always meant to outlive their children. At least, you know, I'm Jewish, so we have a different outlook on timelines and death. Even though it's all the same, we always say that the day that you are born, the day is the day your death date is written, and that comes up. It's before you come. So for us, you know, this isn't random, but it seems random while we're here. Can I ask you a question? And this is where this comes in. Was your father alive when this happened to your son?
No, he had passed 12 years earlier.
But my uncle, who had
similar abilities, was still alive.
Okay, that's where I'm going to ask a lot of questions. So please continue, Mark. I'm sorry if I interrupted because that's terrible.
No.
I did want people
no
to know that because when you talk about your dad, and we will go into him, you know, the first thing I'm going to say and my audience would say is, well, did, you know, Mark's father is such a prominent medium. Did he contact your son? So that's why I wanted the timeline clear. So
Gotcha. Really,
you didn't even have your dad at this point to rely on it with your son, correct?
Correct. What I had were the memories of the things I'd experienced and seen when I was younger that gave me that confidence. But since my uncle was still around and his abilities were similar to my father's, I did reach out to him shortly after Brandon passed. And at the time of the passing, we didn't know the cause of death or what was going on. And he asked me if he could do anything for me. And I just said, yeah, if you get any kind of connection that you can share, I'd really appreciate it. It was, I believe, the third day, 3 days after the passing, I was in the mortuary, and we connected by cell phone, and my uncle told me that he had tried to connect the night prior, but he was unsuccessful. But that particular morning, he had made a connection with my dad. My dad came to him, told him that he was there when Brandon transitioned, that Brandon was a little confused, and that, but he helped him adjust and understand what was going on. Passed along that Brandon wanted us to know we were the best parents he ever could have had, which is a nice warm fuzzy thing we like to hear. But then he gave me the evidence, and he said that your dad said Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen in his bloodstream that caused his heart to fail. And then 2 days later, I talked to the physician who had done the autopsy, and she told me that Brandon suffered a severe asthma attack that drove his blood oxygen levels down, causing cardiac arrest. So I got the cause of death from my uncle 2 days before the autopsy results were revealed to me.
Well, you know what I love about that, Mark, and I know this is tough for you. It's really tough for me, and it isn't, you know, it takes you, everyone who has a child, it takes you right to them, is that, you know, I'm so glad that you're in this kind of family, because some people would have said, oh, he didn't give you the, he just said that they had, it had lack of oxygen in his blood. They didn't say that he died of an asthma attack, which is why I want people to hear this. You don't always get messages the way you want to hear them. They don't always come as clear and concise as, well, your son died of an asthma attack. You have to put sometimes the pieces together. And I love that you said that, because there are people out there that will say, no, no, they didn't tell me this. But really, they did. You just got to put the pieces together. So do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he was actually pretty darn specific. I mean, the end result was cardiac arrest, and that was caused by the lack of blood oxygen. So what caused that, you know, didn't really matter as much. I guess you could put two and two together and say, well, what would cause the drop in blood oxygen level? And it would either be an asthma attack or a drowning. He was on ground, so I guess you could piece it together and
well,
say,
you don't have the,
but
yeah.
I think that was a lot of information, yes. It was highly specific.
It was, but I know I've had clients, and unless you tell them exactly, they will say, well, you didn't tell me this. So that's why I like when you just told me that. I want people to hear that a lot of times you're looking for a specific answer where you think it's specific. Other people might say, well, he didn't say asthma. So I love that you brought this up, because I want people to know that there's mediums out there and they're really good. You sometimes have to put the dots together. And that's exactly what, as a nurse, I knew that it's sometimes people don't. So was your, when you went there, did that comfort you more that you knew that?
Oh, yeah. I think the thing is that it not only gave comfort to me, but my family members as well, and even extended friends and so forth. I shared that with a lot of people. It had a two-pronged effect, I guess. One was the comfort it gave, but also it took me out of my shell in terms of being really open about sharing this kind of stuff, which, you know, in the business world and the job I was in at the time was probably viewed as highly unusual. But when your kid passes, you know, you kind of lose your fear of how you're being viewed by other people, and you just want to share your truth. And that was just one of a number of experiences that kind of was a domino effect that took me into deeper into the field, into, you know, where I would actually have the content to write these books.
I love that. And we're going to hear that in just a minute. Now I'm going to digress 12 years before this. And now I want to go into your dad. So you grew up in a home that was very, very psychic, and you feel that, because in your book, and tell me if I quoted you wrong, but you didn't feel you got the gifts or the way your dad did, correct?
That's right. I mean, I never felt like I had it like he did. He would always say, oh, my son Mark is very psychic, but I'm just like, well, I can't do what you do, so I don't know why you say that. But that was my view of what it meant to be psychic.
Yeah, I love that, because my son says the same thing. I always say, and he's probably the most psychic, just like I feel about you. I feel that, you know, growing up in that kind of home, that's only, there's only two ways you can go. One is that you know you're psychic and you fall right into those footsteps. Or two, there's such big shoes to fit into that you almost say, no, I don't have anything. And so with you, and I know you've been told, and I think I told you, you've got plenty of gifts. It's how you want to use them. And I think you were also told that in the book. But so go ahead. Tell me a little bit about your father and growing up.
Yeah, well, I think part of it was that, like, I can't fill these shoes. If you're Michael Jordan's son, are you going to be as good of a basketball player as he is? That kind of
right.
a thing. But at the same time, I also saw the grief that he had to put up with from skeptics, because he was very out there and he was demonstrating all over the place in a number of different venues. So he had to put up with that. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want that, you know, that constant hassle. So, but you know,
you
living
corporate.
In the house, it was
you went corporate, right? You went corporate.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, in the corporate world, it's a little bit different, but you know, I earned my stripes there too. And then after all this happened and I had my books come out, I was open about it and shared the books and my story with a lot of people who in some cases I would have thought they'd never be interested in this or they'd be highly skeptical, but in fact, they were very open to it. So it was actually a good thing for me to kind of shed that fear and to go forward with it. But as far as growing
and
up
I love
with this,
that.
Yeah, it was just, you know, living in a household where dad knew what was going on and you couldn't get away with a lot. Now, I had an older brother who in his teen years, my dad thwarted his efforts at drag racing, fighting, and he had somebody buying him beer when he was underage, so he stopped all that stuff. And my brother once said, how would you like to have a dad like you?
I love it.
My mom,
I guess
this
I don't
is a story that's in my
that,
first
so.
Book. When my parents were first married, my mom was trying to become a vegetarian, and she'd gone a couple of months without eating meat. But one day she just got a hankering for a burger, went out and got a hamburger, and came back home. And then later that day, my dad came home. The first words out of his mouth were, so Shirley, did you enjoy your hamburger today? So that's what it was like.
I absolutely love that story. You know, we have a lot in common. I became a vegetarian about 5 years ago, but I have not touched meat. So we, maybe 6 years ago, I don't know, something like that. But your house sounds like the household my kids grew up in. They really can't get away with anything. The problem with that is that they don't always listen. So I don't know about you and your brother, but it didn't matter that I know what's going to go on. And I can tell you that I can't show up at everything. So did your father ever embarrass you by showing up at something?
I can't remember. Now, just to clarify, my brother was 10 years older than me. And my parents ended up splitting up when I was like 11. So I didn't share the brunt of those things when I was a teenager, although I did spend good chunk of my summers with my dad and then other times, but he traveled a lot. So I wasn't with him full time after age 11 or thereabouts. I was in Little League when I was 12 years old, and he did show up unexpectedly for a championship game that I was in that we happened to win, which was great. And I appreciated that because he didn't often make it to those kinds of things. But whether he had known psychically or whether my mom told him, I don't know. But yeah, I don't really remember that much of that kind of thing. I just remember him detecting things that you thought were secrets.
You know, I want to read a person in chat. Danny wrote, I relate, and this is just a sideline. If you know me, I'm ADHD and I work on 8 tracks at once, so you're just going to have to follow this. It says, I relate to Mr. Ireland so much. My mother and grandmother both had the gift, and although I was told I had it, I've had issues tapping into it. I don't know if that's you, Mark. I don't know that you've had issues. I just don't know how much you want to or do. So, Danny, that's wonderful that you wrote that, and I'm glad you're listening. But you know, Mark, I loved that Little League that you were in. My son played Babe Ruth. Okay. And I always looked at his game, and I knew what was going to happen most of the time. So I just relate to this whole family, and I think you and I are about the same age. I'm not sure. I might be a little older than you. So it'd be like my father showing up, your father. So let me ask you a question. Do you contact your dad? And then I want to ask you about another family member you have. Do you contact your dad at all?
So let me put it this way. I feel like at times I do mentally try and ask for his help or guidance with certain things. When I wrote, this is another story, it's kind of a side story, but I discovered a book that he'd written that I didn't know existed. It was a manuscript called Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development. This was 12 years after he passed.
I was
going to
ask you about that.
Yes. Well, let me just tell the story of how this was discovered, because it's pretty remarkable. So
yeah.
I really have to go back to 1 or 3 weeks after my son Brandon passed. It was February 2004. I was watching the local Phoenix area NBC affiliate news, and they showed an excerpt about some research being done at the University of Arizona at the time using mediums studied under blinded conditions. And this particular medium was Alyssa Dubois before the show Medium came out. And she was reading for people that she was not able to see or communicate with directly. And she was giving really highly specific information. And then at the end, they debrief with the people. And pretty much everything she said was right on target. I was really impressed and thought, boy, I'd love to get a reading from this, you know, from her. I'd love to be in that lab. Well, little did I know both those things would subsequently happen. The very next day, I got a call from a man named Jerry Conser. And Jerry said to me, hey, Mark, I know what you've been through, and I know someone who might be able to help you. Her name is Alyssa Dubois, and here's a phone number you can call to get a reading scheduled. So I thought that was more than serendipity. It was synchronistic. And
Absolutely. So
I called and got the appointment, but she was so busy even then, it took till August before I could see her. So fast forward to August, 2 weeks before I meet with her, a man gives me a box, and inside the box is this manuscript, all 8.5 by 11 type pages. It says, Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development by Richard Ireland, dated 1973. I'm like, where did you get this? And he says, well, you were out of state at the time, and your dad gave it to me for safekeeping because he was going to pass away soon. I said, well, you've had it for 12 years. Why are you giving it to me now? And he goes, I just feel like I'm supposed to. 2 weeks later, I meet with Alyssa Dubois. Have a phenomenal reading, but one of the very first things she says to me is, well, I've got your father here, and he's showing me a book, but I think it's his book, and he's handing it to you to take forward. Does that make sense to you? And I'm like, yeah, I think I get that. And I did subsequently get that book published. But what I was going to say, because that's a long way to lead up to this, but in the course of getting that book published, I decided to write the foreword to it. And I wanted to express what I thought he would want said about who's reading that book and who's going to study what he's teaching and why. And I want it to be for the right reasons. And I felt like it's a sacred thing. You should be pursuing it to help other people and be of service and not for your own ego and that kind of thing. That's kind of essentially what I wrote in the foreword. Then I happened to find some papers that he had left behind, my dad, and I read one, and it was called To the Would-Be Medium. And as I read that, it was almost exactly what I had written in the foreword. So it seemed pretty clear that he had influenced, you know, me in terms of what I'd written. But I've also had other cases where, I mean, almost every time I talk to a medium, they're always like, oh, your dad says this, or your dad that. And it's he seems like a really good communicator, better than most on the other side. And it's probably because he did it when he was on this side and he understands the process and is just better at it. And in fact, I think that's even why when my uncle gave me the message, my dad was facilitating the message instead of Brandon doing it directly, because he had just crossed over and he probably didn't know the methodology for how it works.
You know, it's so funny because, you know, I'm a medium also. And every time you're talking about your father, and we'll go into this, whether it is or not. Well, I want to go into astral reality and astral experience, alternate reality and astral experience in just a second. But your dad keeps showing me, it's like the magician card. Do you know what the magician card is in the tarot deck? Do you know anything about tarot? Yeah.
No, I know what tarot is, but I don't know what that card represents.
Okay, so if you can put, when we get off the show, just pull it up on your computer, put in magician card. So it is this magician, and he doesn't really look like a magician, but he's got his hands pointed to the sky and one hand pointed to the earth. And on the table, He has a pentacle, a star, a cup, and a wand. A pentacle, a sword, a cup, and a wand. And to us, when we read tarot, it means that you have all the tools that you need from heaven to earth, and that it's there. And so when I see your father, every time you talk, I've got him as that wizard as a magician. Take a look at it when you get off the show.
I just brought it up.
But your dad,
yeah.
Yeah. So your dad to me had the tools. He had many tools. He had all the tools of the earth, the sun, the wind, the sky, because that's what, you know, the pentacles are about earth. The cups are about emotions. The swords are about, I call them fire, but it's actually air. And the wands are about fire, which I call earth. I switch them up because when I read, I just don't read the sword and the wand is the same as most people. But he's got all of those tools, and he's showing them to me as we're talking. So your dad had a lot of all those gifts going. And Mark, I know that probably isn't great for him or you as a family, but for me, when you have that many tools, you have to be of service. And that's what your dad did. He was of service to many people. And I know that you put in the book or you know, somewhere that he is almost like he wore himself too thin doing things for other people in these gifts. And he probably, his home life suffered. But the truth of the matter is, for me, and I don't know for anyone else, but when you have that many gifts your dad was given, that's where he felt he needed to be earthly, is giving and being of service to others. So before I, you know, get more involved in you, because that's where we're going next, can you please tell everybody you have it in your book that he's read for famous people, and what did he do? What did you know he did for people that we'd all know? I mean, do you have any,
sure,
you know, little things you could tell us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So first off, you're right. He had all the gifts. In fact, I think that's what made him so unique and so dynamic with his demonstrations, in that he was clairvoyant. He had telepathy. He was a medium, mental medium and a trance medium. I'm trying to think of the term, psychometry, all of the things, all the methodologies for psychic phenomena and mediumship, he had them. So it made him very accurate and able to provide much more information than most psychics or mediums can. You know, not just letters of a name, but like first and last names and all kinds of stuff like that. So I think it just made his work more compelling. He counseled Mae West amongst some other Hollywood celebrities. Now, he met her first in 1952 through Jack Kelly, who was her personal psychic at the time. And then years later, after Kelly had passed, he was in Los Angeles doing some work, and their paths crossed, and then they became friends. He became her personal psychic counselor. And then I actually got to meet her when I was 19 years old and got to tour her apartment, which still looked like it was 1928.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool. And then, so he met other celebrities. I imagine a lot of that was through her, but also he was on TV shows. The one that I have clips for that's really the best is the Steve Allen Show in 1971. And when people go to my website, it's markirelandauthor.com. Mark with a K, Ireland like country, author, markirelandauthor.com. You can find a clip of my dad on Steve Allen's show, but he was on that. Merv Griffin, Dinah Shore, a bunch of other popular shows of the day. And some of the people he counseled were like, now these are names from the past, so younger people listening may not know them, but Glenn Ford, David Jansen, Amanda Blake. She was Miss Kitty on Gunsmoke. I got to meet her because she lived in Phoenix, and we were in Phoenix, and I came over one day, and she was sitting there, and my dad had just read for her, and she had tears in her eyes, but they weren't sad tears. They were happy tears. So he had the celebrity connections, but really his origin story goes back to Columbus, Ohio, when he was a child. He was born in a town called Marengo, Ohio, very rural, 30 miles or so northeast outside of Columbus. At age 5, he went in for corrective surgery on his eyes because he was born cross-eyed. And when they took him out, after surgery, his eyes were cupped and bandaged. They'd actually strapped him to a bed because they were afraid he would mess with the bandages. So this nurse walked by and felt sorry for him and said she would let him go if he promised not to touch the bandages. So he agreed. She went on about her rounds, came back to find him bouncing the ball against the wall and catching it, and thought, oh, my God, he's removed the bandages. But he hadn't, which was probably even more freaky to her. And then she called on some doctors to witness this, and then they put him in a bed and had one doctor stand at the foot of the bed and another throwing voices from the door and asking who was in front, and he would get it right every time. So that was kind of the first instance where they knew there was something unique about him. And then he became, you know, like the family prophet or whatever, where he always would predict things that would happen, and he would always know when Grandpa was coming, even though they didn't have a telephone or even a TV or anything back then. But Grandpa would show up within a certain period of time, and they actually started planning meals around his predictions about when Grandpa would arrive. And then at the age of 12, he stumbled into a spiritualist church, which he didn't even know what it was, but he was interested. And as he walked in, a woman gave him a piece of paper and a pencil and said, you could write a question. He goes, well, I don't know what to write. And she says, well, just write a message, please, and then put your name, Richard Ireland. So he did that, and then they collected all the papers and took them up to a man who had taped and blindfolded his eyes. And the man was the pastor of that spiritualist church. Within a short period of time, the man called on my dad. Now, a few weeks prior to this, my dad's best friend had died in a car accident. The two boys had been playing in the creek just before this, and they shared secret code names for each other. Well, anyhow, fast forward, and my dad's in this church, and the man calls him and says, Richard Ireland. He goes, well, I have a young man who's passed, and he's here, and he's giving me a secret name, and that name is Paisley. What an unusual name, Paisley? Not Paisley, Paisley. And it turns out that was the secret code name that the boys had for my dad's friend. So my dad was really touched by this, but highly intrigued. And the man went on to say, someday you'll be doing what I do. And so he mentored my dad, and then my dad graduated a year early at the age of 17 from high school. And he actually started doing trance work at the age of 17, 18. And he was very adept at doing blindfold billet, but no trickery. I mean, he had 10 strips of Johnson & Johnson medical tape that went over his eyes. That's an opaque tape that's highly sticky if anyone's ever doesn't know what it is. That three opaque blindfolds over that and more tape. And that Steve Allen show really gives you a good representation. And then he would have people write questions, send them up. And, you know, even if he could read the things, he's giving so much more information that's even on that, touching on stuff that's verified as correct. And reading for probably 50% of an audience, there's no way that could be faked. So that was kind of his signature psychic thing that he did. He did a lot of personal readings. He did trance mediumship and other things as well. He would do annual prophecies once a year. So it was kind of across the board.
That was I love.
Story that people love the most is in my first book, Soul Shift, and that's when I was on my second date with Susie, who's my wife now and my wife of a long, long time. But it was our second date, and I showed up at the age when I was 19. I didn't really know what to do that evening. I said, well, you want to go to a disco? You want to go see my dad's psychic demonstration? You want to go to dinner? She goes, oh, let's go see your dad. So we went there, and I'm running late. My dad's already started, completely taped and blindfolded, doesn't know I'm coming. So I said, why don't you write a question? And she says, what should I write? And I just said, ask something about the future. So she wrote, will my mom ever get married? And then she signed her name. Well, her mom had been dating a man. Her mom had been divorced for a number of years and had been dating a man for a while, but she was kind of noncommittal, even though he wanted to get married. So her question gets sent up, and a while later, my dad picks it up and says, Susie Sap Soup. Well, her last name was Sipe. And he goes, close enough. And he says, well, I think you've asked me about your mother and if she's going to get married. Well, I don't know about your mother, my dear, but you've made your choice of men and he's with you tonight. And so I spoke up and said, Dad, Susie's my date. And he says, oh, I guess I just married off my own son.
I love that. Your dad is a tip. I could feel it now. And let me ask you a question, and I've got a couple callers that want, and we don't have as much time as I'd love, but can I ask you a question? Where does that leave you, Mark? Where does that leave you in your life?
I think being back in this field has given me a sense of fulfillment to carry on his legacy or restore it. I think he was kind of lost to history. So I've been able to do that. I've also been able to help myself heal, help other people heal. Co-founded an organization called Helping Parents Heal that has 26,000 members now, 165 affiliate chapters, and holds a conference every other year, including this year, that will draw over 1,000 people and bring great healing to them to write these books. I think the path I've taken to this point has been more of a journalistic, objective approach. So when you ask about my own development and my focusing on that, I have definitely seen sporadic cases of that have been very compelling, but it hasn't been a focal point of or dedication for me for a number of reasons. I think one of which is because I think there's a lot of responsibility to do readings for grieving people. If I were to shift gears and try and go down that path and be that person, then I'm kind of setting behind the work I've done to this point, which is the more objective journalistic approach, because it can't really be both at that point.
I know. And you know what? You're going to hate me. And I am going to say this because I am such a lover of your dad's field. I do, but you know, I'm a 3D, 4D girl, a 3D, 5D girl, whichever you want to say. So I'm going to tell you that as talented as you could be, and you are, I hope, and you know that, and maybe it's not meant to be in this lifetime for you, but I hope that you choose to do both.
Well, it still could happen. I mean, I've done test readings for friends, and then I would just ask to get information that I don't know, and was really surprised what I got, how accurate it was, and how unusual some of the stuff was.
Don't you think your father's there helping you?
Probably, yeah.
That's where you're getting your information from.
One of the craziest ones was a few years ago. For a 3-year stint, I was invited to speak at this church in San Francisco called the Golden Gate Spiritualist Church. This church had been founded in 1924 by a woman named Florence Becker, who was similar to my dad in her abilities. And I would each time bring a medium friend, Tina Powers, who lived in Tucson, and we would go there together. I'd do a talk, and then she would give readings to the congregation. But this particular time, she said, Mark, I think you're going to get a message. Will you share it? I'm like, sure, if I get something, I'll share it. She pestered me about this over and over. Even on the day we arrived at the church, she goes, Mark, if you get a message, will you share it? And I'm like, yeah, Tina, I told you I would. I will. Go into the church. I said, I've got about 30 minutes to prepare. So I sit down in their healing room, sitting on a bench to an organ or piano, and just tried to quiet my mind, and a name popped in, Max. And then immediately after that, Maxine. And I thought, oh, maybe it's Maxine and not Max. Now, I didn't hear this auditorially. I didn't see it as a vision. It just came in like an idea or a thought would. That's it. Just very simple, very subtle. And so I went and gave my talk, and then at the end I said, Tina made me promise if I got anything, I'd share it with the congregation. I have to ask if the names Max or Maxine mean anything to anyone here. And the pastor of the church, his jaw dropped, and he's like, well, Max and Maxine were twins born to the church founder, Florence Becker. They were delivered stillborn and grew up on the other side. He said, I think we know who is here right now. And then after that, he took me upstairs and showed me a painting that I believe Florence Becker had done. And it was a landscape with a long winding road with two little figures at the end. And he goes, that's Max and Maxine. So that's one of the more significant ones I've had. I would say to get those two names, which aren't common, and get both of them. And they were highly pertinent to the people at that church, was pretty validating for me to know that, okay, it's there in latent form. And maybe if I ever choose to do that, maybe I can do that, you know?
I love that you're able to, and I love that your father will be with you, because I can see it right now. When you're ready to step into those shoes, he will be right there, because we all need, our spirit guides and, and the universe and whoever you think is giving you your messages. One of them is going to be your dad, and your dad is going to be so prominent. It's unbelievable. And what messages you could bring to help. So, you know, I'm all prejudiced about that, darling. So I would say, honey, throw yourself in, but when you're ready. I do want to at this point tell everybody that you've written books. I haven't started that, and I meant to, but you know, tell everybody, please, first of all, where they can read your book, which will give them more insight and information, because this doesn't even touch on what, you know, on what you've put in the book. I wanted to ask you about your sister. I hope that she'll come back, is what I hope. I wanted to ask you very quickly. We can, you know, go through your sister and what she said before she passed, and also where, like I said, I'm very interested in Mark Ireland, and that to me is part of your books and part of your legacy you're leaving here. So can you tell everyone how to get your book, should they want to read more about you and more about your dad and more about the journey you were on?
Yeah, you can get my book. The easiest place to find it is just go to my website, because I have links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and some other retailers. It's pretty much available through any bookshop or whatever. They may not have it on the shelf, but you can order it. But the easiest way is just go to markirelandauthor.com, Mark with a K, Ireland like the country, author, markirelandauthor.com. You'll find all the links to my books. My first book was called Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. That one is my journey initially after my son passed. It includes a lot of my learnings early on. It reflects on my growing up with my dad. It also includes four readings, blinded readings from highly competent mediums, including the last one, which was done for Discovery Channel in the University of Arizona lab. And then my next book that came out in the fall this year is The Persistence of the Soul. This one is a deeper dive into the field. It still has the personal narrative and my own experiences, but it also gets into the research and science supportive of my experiences. It also touches on things like skeptics and the difference between open-minded skeptics who are interested in learning and people who are just debunkers. They've already got a worldview that's closed off against this, and they're just trying to put it down without even looking at the evidence. I look at psychic phenomena mediumship as reflected in religion and history, from both Eastern religions to the Western monotheistic religions as well, because there are a lot of people in the U.S.
Which I love that chapter. I love that chapter, and I wish we could delve further into that, but that's not going to be for today. But I love that chapter, and I hope that everybody does get to read your book, because that's one of the ones that I like flipped right to. Go ahead.
I think people who... maybe they've grown up in a more fundamentalist Christian household, or they have friends or family who are like that, and they're telling them to stay away from this stuff. Read that chapter. I think you get a much better perspective that I think would ease some of those concerns. I have a chapter on reincarnation. I have a chapter on some of my experiences, what we were just talking about, like those experimental readings I did and some of the things that I got. I have a chapter on my sister. Before she passed, we conducted an experiment where she wrote a secret code, put it in a sealed envelope, and then I sought out responses from mediums after she passed. I talk a little bit about something called the combination lock experiment, and that's it's actually set up by Dr. Ian Stevenson of the University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies. He's an authority on reincarnation, did a lot of research there. Well, before he died, he set a combination lock, and then he set it to a number sequence that he equated to an alpha code. So in other words, if somebody, whether it's a medium or just an average person through a dream state, were to deliver a six-letter word or a six-word phrase, with the first letter of each word being converted to a number, or the six letters of the six-digit word converted to numbers through a decoder he left behind, if successful, it would open a lock. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm actually working on that again right now with Tricia Robertson, who is the former president of the Scottish Society of Psychical Research. So, and then I give really an example of an exceptional reading in the book too. And then I also tell you how to find a credible medium and how to avoid frauds and people who are maybe deluded and think they have more ability than they have.
Well, I'll tell you, we have exactly 5 seconds left. So I just want to say thank you, Mark. You are a wonderful, fabulous guest. I didn't want this to be your typical book type interview. I wanted them to get to know the meat of you and part of your family. And I feel your father was pretty interesting. I love that we got to know you a little bit better. And I hope the next time you come on, we'll delve further into all the subjects that I love. So I want to thank you, Mark, for being here. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And unfortunately, I left 15 minutes for people to ask questions, and we took them up talking because I think that that was more important at this point. So please tune in, and let's see if we can get Mark back. Mark, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thing.
And thank you for writing this book and giving everybody insight into your family, your life, and medium psychics. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
When you stay at Averbo, you always get the whole home. Not part of it, but the whole upstairs, the whole downstairs, the whole fridge, the whole backyard, and the whole nap room. Because is it really a vacation home if you have to share it with the host? Only whole vacation homes. Always all yours. Book on the Verbo app.
Some people just know the best rate for you is a rate based on you with Allstate. Not one based on the driver who treats the highway like a racetrack and the shoulder like a passing lane. Why pay a rate based on anyone else? Get one based on you with DriveWise from Allstate.
Not available in Alaska or California, subject to terms and conditions. Rates are determined by several factors, which vary by state. In some states, participation in DriveWise allows Allstate to use your driving data for purposes of rating. While in some states, your rate could increase with high-risk driving, generally, safer drivers will save with DriveWise. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.